You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of Fly on the Call, candid conversations on music. Today, I am extremely excited to bring you a conversation with vocalist and guitar player Eric Garlington, who along with bassist Natasha Johnson and drummer Eli Watson make up the band Proper. Proper performs a unique brand of punk and emo, with influences ranging from hip-hop to progressive metal to R&B. The band recently surprise-released their sophomore album, I Spent the Winter Writing Songs About Getting Better, through Big Scary Monsters, and are currently on their first full U.S. tour. Out of the approximately 50 interviews I've conducted over the past 5 years writing about music, this one truly stands out as a favorite of mine. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Eric of Proper. So I'm curious, like, now that the album's out, what have you been working on, either like personally or professionally?
Really just trying to get a van, just saving up for that. My license has been suspended since like 2011, 2012. So I'm just now getting all that figured out in time for this tour. And just really, it's been a whole struggle because it got revoked in Kansas. And now I live in New York. And I guess in New York, you have to have your own car for the road test. So now I'm like trying to find someone with a car. I'm trying to save up the money because it's also not free here like it was when I was 16 years old. So it's just really, I don't have any cool answer. I'm just trying to get my privilege to drive back. That's it.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a good goal to have.
Not bad to be
that's
in a
pretty,
band. I should have thought of that sooner.
I feel like that's a pretty, like, high standard to meet, to have your own car in order to take
the test. Yeah, in New York? Like, who owns a car here? So that's, everyone's just like, I don't own a car. What are you talking about? Like, a lot of my people that are from here are just like, I don't even know how to drive. Like, why would you ask me?
And then, like, if you had to distill Proper down to, like, one mission or, like, statement of your ethos, like, what would that be?
Oh. I guess on like all of our bios are very like tongue in cheek and it just says NWA. So I guess just that, if I'd like to distill it down to our simplest form, because I was like, oh, you're not going to write like anything about your actual selves? I'm like, no, this sounds cool and mysterious. So it would just be that.
That's perfect. Yeah. I mean, once you listen to the music, you pretty much get an idea pretty quickly as well. So I don't think
it's pretty straightforward stuff. Yeah.
I know I was listening to the Sound and Story podcast that you did, and you mentioned how you hadn't shown it, the album, to your family yet, but you were going to send it to them like the night before you came out.
Yeah.
As much as you're comfortable sharing, what was like their reaction to it?
Oh my God. Okay. So my mom, in true mom fashion, like kind of half-assed listened to it. She was like, I didn't really hear what you were saying, but like it sounds good. It's okay. So I got a pass. That was a freebie. My brothers and my dad was like, okay, I'm listening to it now. And one of my brothers was giving like a play-by-play, like, oh, song one is great. Song three, this is cool. And then like it got to that song, and then none of them got back to me. So, and it's like I'm about to go on tour, and I'm about to like see them in person. So I'm sure like it's just going to be very awkward. And just over some beers, they're just going to tell me how they feel and go from there. But I guess I got off pretty easy. But of course, my family just avoided the conflict like we tend to do in our family blood. So I'll figure it out. Ask me again in a month when I have to actually play the town that they live in.
That's certainly a way to handle it. I know I talked to Virginity a couple months back, and he has like a line on the album that's like saying basically like, I'm not going to be able to work through stuff until I fight my own dad. And he's like,
yeah.
I literally haven't sent it to them. So I guess I'll probably find out when they do hear it.
Oh my God. Yeah. Virginity fucking rips, by the way. They're great. But
same
conflict.
So I actually feel like I don't have a super good handle on like the timeline, especially of the suburbs. Could you like walk me through a little bit, like, because I know you'd been in New York for like a couple of years by the time it had come out. So could you walk me through a little bit of like the writing and recording and releasing of both that and then this album too?
Yeah, so I moved here, I think this December will be 5 years, so 4.5 years ago. My wife and I, we came here for like 4th of July. I proposed to her, and then we were just like, man, like nothing compares to this. So like 5 months later, we moved here for good. And it took me about 2.5-ish years to like find my scene, which is really, it resulted to me like on the emo subreddit. It was like, what's your local scene like? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I can't find it. And then my friend Jackson was like, oh man, come to this show. And that like introduced me to everyone that I know now. So then from there, I played at one of their houses. They did this thing called Nosebleed Session. And I did an acoustic set, and that's when I met Natasha. And she literally was just like crying. She's like, if whatever you need, I will play it. Please tell me you're looking for bandmates. So I met her through that. Then Eli, through a friend that lives here, she used to date his cousin when he would come up and visit. And then she was like, oh, yeah, he plays drums, and he's moving here in like a month. So like the second he moved here, I was like, hey, before anyone even asks you, please be in a band with me. I'll do anything, please. So this band was just made through a lot of begging and crying, pretty much. But so that happened. And then I've always been the type where I like kind of like want to keep everything under wraps until it's like done. So we spent like 8 months, me teaching him the songs and then like us recording. And then I think I just surprise released the whole thing. Oh, okay. I surprise released everything. Like I was like, surprise, my band is like ready. Here's the band, here's our first music video, here's the album, here's the website, here's all of our merch. And I just did that, and I kind of flooded like Reddit, Tumblr, Instagram, stuff like that. And then, so we did that. And then for, I think, a year and a half, then we were just like, okay, we're a good trio, we've toured, we've done some stuff, like, so let's start working on the next record. And then just like by chance, Big Scary Monsters hit us up. And it's just like, hey, are you working on another record? Because we'd love to release it. And I was like, yes, actually. But like in real reality, we had like talked about it. And then I was like, okay, I'll start writing it this week. And then like 2 months went by. And then I was like, okay, yeah, we'll meet you at our next tour in the UK. And they're like, okay, yeah, cool. Like, let me hear some stuff. So like we just quickly wrote this record in 6 weeks. They learned all the parts. And then we went out to tour. And I was like, yeah, the record's done. Like, here's some songs. Like, and we just bullshitted our way into that. Sorry, Kevin, if you listen or read this. I was not prepared, but luckily Kev from, he's just the head honcho at Big Scary Monsters. He just had complete faith in us. And he was just, when we got back, he was just like, yeah, like let's do this. What do you have in mind? And then we did the whole record and secrecy thing again. And then I think it was April, May, we started like releasing videos. I think we did 2 videos. And then kind of just like, we didn't put out anything about when it was coming out or like if it was even a full album. And then in June, we were just like, surprise, here's the whole record. Here's vinyl, here's shirts, here's all the merch. But pretty much we did the same thing that we did with the first record, but just with more push this time with our label. Because we got onto a pretty small DIY label called Old Press Records for our first album. And that was like after it came out, like 6 months later. So this time we had like a bit more of a push. We made a Twitter. We had help making merch and stuff this time. So just a lot of secrecy and a lot of just winging it, honestly.
Well, it's really rad how it like all came together so kind of like organically and stuff.
Yeah, very like, because I obviously 3 years of nothing, finding no one, like, because I jammed with some people before and they were just like, you know, this is moving too slow, or it's like, let's announce it right now and we'll just put up a phone recording, or like, you know. And then Eli and Natasha were just like, no, take our time, when it's ready. Like, they're just super patient with me and my procrastination.
That's awesome.
And then when it was time, yeah, I would be like, all right, here's 6 songs, learn them all. And then like, because of course I would write like a chunk of the record and then not do anything for a week and then write 4 more songs, and that was kind of the process.
Nice. And that's like, must be like a really different writing process than like the first album, because I'm pretty sure in a couple of the interviews that I read or listened to, you mentioned that like at least 1 or 2 of the songs were like years old at that point, and even from like kind of other projects and stuff.
Yeah, there are a few. So what's the intro song called? Curtains Down. I wrote that one initially with like a band that I was in Kansas City, so like at least 5 years ago. And I just kind of rewrote a few verses to it because I just really loved it and I never had a chance to like record it. So I did that. And I think No Loitering was also from that time. And I was like, these songs are just, I love them so much. I would love to see what you guys do to them. And I was like, okay, yeah, now we definitely have to put these on the record.
That's really awesome how like it kind of came together from the past too. And I remember, like, probably years ago, maybe when, like, The Wonder Years Suburbia came out, or maybe The Greatest Generation, seeing an interview with Dan saying how kind of writing is almost, like, easier for him because it's basically just kind of updating listeners on what happened in the last, like, year or two of his life. Is that, like, a, kind of a similar experience for you?
Yeah, I mean, I try to have, like, so my first love, like, before music was film, so, like, I try and have, like, a whole, like, narrative story arc. Like, I think instead of just writing a bunch of songs and I'd, like, piece the album from there, what I'll do is, like, start a Google Doc with the album title, because that's what I figure out the album title first, and then, like, I, instead of, like, a song name, or I just put, like, the idea and then kind of order it in, like, the arc that I want to go, and then I'll actually start writing the song. So it definitely is, like, part of my life and what I want the entire theme for the record to be. Because, you know, there could be a song that doesn't fit the theme that I just stopped or just didn't put on there because I didn't think it really meshed with everything else.
And, I mean, I think it's really cool the way, obviously, like, the album starts with the reprise of the last album. That's not something that I've, like, seen before. Like, a couple records, like, this year and maybe in the last couple of years kind of started the same way that, or ended the same way that they finished. So they're, like, kind of doable. But, starting it so that you, if you listen to the both albums in a row, that it's like kind of one experience. It's a pretty cool thing, in my opinion. Like, how did that idea kind of come about?
Honestly, just for my love of Coheed and Cambria, do you listen to them at all?
I mean, I know the one song that was on Rock Band. And that's about
okay. I think that's Welcome Home. So they have they've been around for like 17 years, I think, and they have this repeating motif. How do you pronounce it? Motif that they've used like almost on every album. And it, and like in an interview, he's like, this like signifies the passing of time. So like, just like my little prog rock heart, just being like, oh, I love that little idea that all of these albums are connected somehow, and this motif will come in. Like on one record, it's just guitar. On one record, they do it with like a four piece and cellos, violins, all that. And then one, it's just like vocals. So just like reusing the same idea and making it really cool. So, and this band called Dance Gavin Dance, which started out, they had a rocky start being like a scene band, but they're like one of the best, most consistent bands I've ever heard in recent years. And he'll have songs, like one will be called the Robot with Human Hair, and there's like parts 1 through 4, and it's like the death of the robot and the rebirth of the robot. And in an interview, he was like, yeah, like I'll just go back to the last song, pick out like a riff that I really liked, and then just make a whole new song out of that riff. So all these like 6 songs are connected somehow from the last one, like a game of 7-Up or something. But yeah, just wanting to like do that little proggy thing and just let people know that this is a continuation of the last story type thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I know you've mentioned in the past too how like kind of prog rock and hip hop are kind of have been like your main listening habits. So like before The Suburbs came out, has that kind of changed since now that you're like kind of more involved in like the punk and emo scene? Has that kind of like added into your rotation a little bit more?
No, like I feel like I probably listen to punk and emo less now. Also, just like when you're booking, you know, a tour, which takes months, and like you're just spending all day on Bandcamp and Spotify listening to local bands, you kind of just like want to shut off emo for the rest of your life. Like listening to like literally just hours and hours of bands in Louisville and then hours and hours of bands in Memphis. So I just feel like I need something different. So just putting on like R&B is just like my relax and like come back down to earth moment because I hate booking so much.
You've talked about kind of how a lot of your writing process is kind of like hearing like a chord or something that you haven't heard before or that you haven't used before and being like, oh, I want to try to make a song out of that. Or like how for this album specifically, you mentioned like doing things that you've never done on guitar and experimenting around a little more. I was actually listening to an interview yesterday. I think it was on the
Better Off podcast
with Steve Albini. And he said that he kind of stole this from another engineer friend of his, that he does like at least one thing every session that he's never done before. So I thought that was kind of like an interesting, that you guys both kind of do a similar thing. How has that kind of like affected, your writing?
It's made it harder. just like, you know, especially being now that we're like, I moved here and I would go to a few shows, but now that it's like we're playing a show every month, every few weeks, or going to one because of our friend's band, I'll just like, I'll be looking at their pedal board while they're playing now instead of like listening sometimes. Or I'll just be like, what is that effect that you use on this song? Or it's like, oh man, they did a really cool thing here. And just, it's the same thing like times 12 now, where I'm just like, I haven't done that. I haven't heard that. What was this chord? Especially now when I listen to so much more R&B and just seeing how complex R&B is, like when you don't even think about it. Like, I think a lot of people think R&B is just like, I made a loop and then like I sang in a falsetto and that was it. But if they're like, some of the chords I see in R&B songs are harder than anything I've ever played before. So just more so, it's just me trying to experiment still more than before. Because the first record, I was like, okay, I have to be, we're an emo band, we can't do anything outside of that. And like, I just believed that until like I heard Bay Faction and they just like perfectly mixed emo and R&B. And I was like, well, shit, why can't I do something like that? So now I'm just trying even more to just do something that I haven't done before.
That's awesome. I feel like it definitely comes through in the music that there's like all these different influences rather than kind of like rehashing the ones that a lot of the other bands are kind of doing.
Thank you.
And I'm curious too, like, I feel like a lot of kind of like the newer bands that I've listened to, and I definitely remember like when Modern Baseball was around, seeing a couple interviews where people would say like, oh, you remind me of this band, and they'd be like, that's cool, we've literally never heard them before. I'm sure you get that a lot too, especially because of like the kind of roots of your influences and listening habits. Like, how does that kind of, what do you think about that, like the idea that like your music sounds similar to these other bands, but like that's not anything you've ever listened to before?
It's weird in a cool way, because then I'll be like, well, now I need to listen to this band. And I'll either be like, oh, I hear what they're saying, or I'll just be like, I don't see it at all. But it's really different, because you wouldn't expect people to be like, oh, like, you remind me of Turnover or something. And I'm just like, I don't know who that is, but I'll listen to them. And it's just like, wow, okay. Like, now that there's this whole new music that I didn't even know existed. And it's just really cool just to see what people think, you know, like, in a non, like, harsh, critical way. Like, to just see what when they hear us, what pops up in their head. It's just really amazing to see everyone's different answers.
And I read in one of the interviews you did about The Suburbs Ruin My Life, you were saying basically that, like, the most important thing to you was having good bars, and kind of everything else in writing was, like, secondary. Did that kind of hold true coming into this album?
Oh, yeah. I kind of had that fear of, like, am I going to be able to top my first album? Because, you know, I had years to write the first record. I wrote it at, like, 22, where I was, like, my most angry. And I was, like, everyone was just, like, oh, man, like, these songs are so good. You're so angry. And, like, that would be the repeating theme. And I just was, like, can I write something that's not angry and still be just as good, if not better? So, but also wanting to just, like, better bars, harder punchlines. like, just like a rapper would, just be, like, trying to, like, have every opening line just be immediately like catches your ear, or just immediately ridiculous to where you're just like, what did they say? So just trying to approach it like, I need to do better than last time, but also not lose my mind in the process.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like, I guess I would call it maybe like a lyrical density to the band. Like,
thank you.
Once it's like a train, like once it starts going, you can't really stop. Could you, like, talk a little bit more about kind of, like, that style and how you, like, developed it?
I just, man, just from talking shit, honestly. Just from talking some shit. And then, like, because it used to be I would just write so many words, so many verses. And then, like, when I kind of, like, got more into learning about song structure, like, and not just cramming everything I can into, like, a three-minute song and, like, actually structuring it and being like, oh, well, a bridge would be good here. Like, actual pacing yourself is what I had to learn. So it used to be I'd write like eight verses, and I was like, there's no way this song is going to be under 6 minutes long. And then I would actually like write the song. I would play a 7-minute song back when I was just an acoustic artist, and it would just be like, I can tell that I'm losing people right now every second. So it was a lot of dialing that back. And then just again, from movies, just like show, don't tell. So like learning about exposition and how to just like say a lot in a little bit of time, and then going back to rap, saying a lot with a lot of ridiculous bars that catch your attention and also a little bit of time. So it just kind of went from doing too much, and then just like you know, what's that quote, like, how do you sculpt? Like, you get a giant stone and you chip away everything that's not what you have in mind. So just going from there, which it took a long time. I think I've been writing lyrics for 11 years now, and it just, I feel like the last 3 years where I finally felt like I know what I'm like 100% doing, and not just like, well, this one isn't that great, but everything else is fine. Like, I'm happy with every part of a song, and learning that I can have the music complement the song and not just be the backdrop. I can do a little like lick here and there instead of just having to stuff that part with like all these words. So yeah, just learning to pace myself.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool that you can kind of like track that progress along the way and stuff too.
Yeah.
And you mentioned like kind of chipping back at stuff like the gang vocals and like New Year's resolutions, and I spent the winter writing songs about getting better. They're like so kind of like simple, but like so powerful at the same time. And I think that those are like standout moments on the album too, in addition to like really thick lines that you guys have.
Thank you. Yeah, that was the goal, because the last record, I think I did harmonies on almost every song. I tried to put gang vocals everywhere. And this time I was just like, I can do less with more. Like places where you think that gang vocals should be, I can just not do that and put like a really sick guitar part instead, or like keys or something. So thank you. That was definitely the goal this time around.
As far as like the lyrical content and you being like so open and personal with your lyrics, is there like anywhere that you kind of like hold back a little bit, or like where do you kind of like draw the line with what you include versus what you don't?
No, like I roasted my own family. There's nothing past that. Really, because I don't have too many like second drafts. Like once I write something, like it, I don't really change it. Like that's it. I think maybe like the most thing I'll change is like the song title. That's where I have the most, like, because ASAP Rocky Type Beat was originally going to be called The Hippocratic Oath. And I was like, oh, but that's like our first single. I want it to be something that people are just like, why is this called this? So I just, that's what I'll like think of mostly now. But just for, I don't know, I can't think of anything where I've just been like, oh, I shouldn't write that. Like I've always just like my first draft is what I go with. Especially with how I'll think of the whole album before I actually start writing it. I'm like, well, this goes into this narrative, so this has to be it. I'll have, like, a lot of, like, fear of my family hearing it, and then I just have to get over it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it also makes sense how, like, kind of a lot of the lyrics almost feel like stream of consciousness a little bit, like, especially the way they're delivered as well. Going back to kind of, like, as the way you like structure the songs and stuff, I feel like there aren't that many like true choruses on the album. Like if anything, it's kind of like a modified version of this chorus that like shows progression within the song. Could you talk a little bit about like that as far as how it plays into your style?
I honestly didn't even realize that until you said that. Like I just tried to think of choruses that are just the same thing repeated, and I can't think of any songs.
I feel like there was maybe like one or two on the album. I'm not positive, but I was looking through the lyrics today and I was like, oh yeah. They're really similar here, but there is like a couple slight changes.
Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of a single song. I guess I didn't realize that I did that. It's the same thing where it's just like, I would just want to like make a full complete story. And I guess that unconsciously melded into the choruses being different from each other and continuing the story instead of being like a hook that you could just repeat every time.
And I know, I think it was in at least one of the press releases that I got sent out, you mentioned like that part of the like your goal in the album, or like part of what you were trying to say in the album, was like finding beauty in vulgarity. Could you kind of like expand on that a little bit, and like has there been any kind of like backlash in that regard?
Surprisingly not. I guess I'm just a vulgar man. I've always kind of been, like, I excelled in school, like, but when I cared. So I would, like, already not want to be there, and then people would think that I wasn't very intelligent because I just didn't apply myself. Like, I was a C student and fine with it, you know? I was just like, I don't want to be here, I'm fine. So everyone just, like, kind of treated me like I was dumb. So then I just kind of, like, believed that I was dumb and just kind of, like, I was that guy who was, like, fucking, and then I fucking, like, it was just my sentence filler. And then I realized, you know, I'd play some older songs to people, and they'd be like, oh, but, like, where's the metaphors? Or, like, you're so blunt, like, don't you want some type of, like, mystique? And I would always be like, no, like, this is how I feel. I don't think I need, like, you know, a simile or anything. Like, I don't need to be the next Shakespeare. And I think a lot of people try really hard. First, like, that meme where you see it's, like, about like straight white dudes writing poetry and how it's always just like my ex and cigarettes and like blue light and stuff, like just being verbose for no reason. I just felt that was very not me. So that was definitely a worry, since it's so much specific things to my life and how I would say them that like people wouldn't, I guess, relate at all. But I think it's just honest that I couldn't see myself like trying to drop some Shakespeare bars to get my point across. It just never felt, because, you know, when I was younger, like I gave into that pressure and tried to write that way. And like I would end up writing like some Lot of Speed type shit that just wasn't, I love Lot of Speed, but it's just not me. Like I'm not calling people darling. And I'm not talking about the smoke on the grass and stuff. So I just felt like, it, you know, just be myself and just see how people react to it. Which luckily there has been not much backlash, I don't think. Nothing comes to mind as far as my vulgarity goes.
Well, that's good to know. So there's not going to be any these and thous on the next proper record?
Yeah, no. We'll see.
I feel like the kind of like the closest that you kind of get to that is the end of the title track during your kind of like 2.5 minute monologue where you're kind of talking about like, oh, like the, I need to remember like this is like the perfect time to exist and like kind of stuff like that. Could you talk to me a little bit about how like that like whole kind of like that section of the song came together and how it really ties up the record?
Yeah, that was actually the last song I wrote for the record. So we went to tour with 13 out of 14 songs done. And I told the label, like, there might be one more. I'm not sure about it yet. And I just remember watching Mac Miller's funeral. And that got me into, like, learning how to play some of his songs. And just being like, I think I want, like, a more R&B outro. Because I think it was going to be Toby, which is, you know, it's fine. But, like, I was just like, there could be more. So that, you know, song gave me the part. I wrote the first half, and then I just kind of re-recorded it, and I was like, yeah, there's going to be a second half. We'll record it eventually, and I just put it off. And I wrote it, like, 3 days before it was time to get into the studio. So I was literally, like, I was like Drake, like, reading it off my phone, trying not to cry, because it was, like, still so new to me. Like, you know, so it's just, I don't know. I think a lot of people, especially with, you know, America and shit right now, like, it's hard to forget that, like, we're in like the highest educated time in human history, the lowest, you know, the lowest dropout rate, the lowest child infant mortality rate. Like things are looking up, but it's just like with this 24-hour news cycle where everything is just like, look at this bad shit though. Like you just kind of forget about the good things. So like, especially with the first half of that song, I was like, okay, like I need to, cause there's just going to be a downer. And I was like, I need to turn this around. This is the title track. I need to do something better about it. So just trying to like, for me, all the time, I have to remind myself how much good things happen to me. And I just think that's the whole point of the record. Like, sometimes you can't see it. It's just like, am I letting my childhood self down and just remember what you have? Like, me and my partner have been together for 8 years, and we love each other, and we've been successful in the city for 5 years. Like, just trying to remind yourself of things that you have and that even if you're not there yet, you can keep trying and hopefully get there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that, like, the whole kind of, like, message behind that really, like, speaks to me, too, because, like, a lot of the things I've been dealing with in, like, the past maybe, like, year or so or whatever, like, once my kind of, like, mindset has started to change, you know, it's, like, that has been what's made, like, the biggest difference. It's, like, okay, something shitty happened today, but overall, it was a good day. Like, I still, you know, hung out with my girlfriend, so, like, whatever, like, kind of letting the little things and the good, like, little good things be what determines, like, how things are going rather than the minor setbacks and stuff.
For
or
sure,
even setbacks.
Yeah, I used to be that guy where it's, like, one thing would go wrong and then my whole day would be ruined. I'd be like, it's fucking 1 p.m. Like, I'm going to be this mad until tomorrow morning. Like, so I just really had to look at myself and just, like just affirmations, like, every, like, not even, like, mantras, like, getting my chakra in order, just being like, you know, look at what you have, look at what you were homeless 5 years ago. And now you're in New York thriving. Chill out, Eric. You'll be fine. Like, just having to do things like that all the time.
For sure. And you mentioned before when we were talking about, like, kind of, like, you cutting down some of the songs. So they're, like, 6 minutes, 8 minutes, 11 verses and stuff.
Yeah.
With the title track being, like, that's, I think, like, 6 to 7 minutes. Was there anything that you had to kind of, like, cut off of that? Or was that, like, kind of just, like, the genuine way it came out?
Yeah, for that one, the entire plan for that one was to be like some epic 7 minute album ender. The one I had to cut down on was Lime Green, Jerry Curl, and White Sheep, because I just wrote so much I was just in my feelings and I wrote so much mean shit and I was like, I can't do this. So those are the two that I had to be like, all right, let's not go there. And let's just, like, you said what you have to say. Why do you have five more verses written? So those two I had to be like, well, what's the best one? What gets the narration across the best?
And then I'm curious, could you, like, talk a little bit about the role of, like, humor in your music? Like, the line, what do you call a guy who doesn't give the expect stay at head? You don't, is, like, so good.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess just, because I started out, you know, metal, which, you know, you're angry if you're in a metal band. Like, at 16, 17, 18, you're already angry. Then you play metal, all black clothes, playing in some bar in Mississippi. So I'm mad. And then I transitioned to folk punk, which is, you know, just whatever. And I just realized, like, you know, people would be like, oh, like, I like that one song. I'm like, oh, well, why didn't you like these other songs? It's like, oh, you're just kind of preaching at me for your whole half-hour set. So for one, it was sort of like a tactical thing where I was just like, you know, who learns anything by being yelled at, by being put down upon, being made to feel stupid? So it was that. And then, like, the second thing, I was just like, you know, like, my favorite artists, like, they imply humor. Like, next thing you know, I'm crying when I was just laughing at this funny line. Or like a Taika Waititi film. There's this really good film called Boy, and it's just like, super, super funny. And the next thing you know, I'm just bawling, and I just didn't see it coming. So I just think it just feels more genuine. That's how life is. It's not just like, you can't just be angry all the time. You can't just like get your message across by screaming someone's face. So why not make it humorous? I like to think I'm pretty funny. I'd be like, you know, I don't have the courage to do stand up, but why not like see if this line gets a laugh or not? So just more experimenting and trying to like get the message out there without it just being like a bullhorn in someone's ears.
Where did the pickle shot clip from No Loitering come from?
So we just got a bunch of friends to come in and talk and tell us a party story. But the pickle shot one was from, whose story was that? I'm pretty sure it was Lily from the band Long Neck. Because we had, I think we had, so obviously me and my bandmates, and then we had about four or five people come in to help out with gang vocals. And then we said one at a time, just like tell us a party story within 30 seconds. Yeah, it was Lily from Long Neck. She plays guitar and Adult Mom also. She's very talented, very good.
That's awesome. I would have sworn, like, the voice sounded so familiar. I would have sworn it was from, like, a sitcom or something.
I wish we can get some type of clearance for, like, a sitcom snippet.
You also, like, you're obviously very self-referential to, like, the previous album, but also, you know, you guys pay a lot of, like, homage to, like, other bands and stuff like that.
Yep.
Is that more, like for example, like, naming the album, I was stumbling writing songs about getting better, and, like, the Dancing Queen outro. How do those, like, kind of references come into the fold?
I guess I just, so like I was saying, before music, my big thing, it still is, my big thing is movie, even TV now. It's like we're in the golden age of television. So, you know, I would just, like, get most of my, like, inspiration from, like, a movie scene or a TV show. Just be like, you know, why don't I just put that in there? Like, in Curtains Down, there's a reference to Community, the TV show.
I was wondering if that was, and then I Googled it and saw that that's, like, actually a phrase that they used in, like, Ireland and the UK. So I was like, I was wondering, though.
yeah, it is. Or, like, in art school, like, that first whole verse was just going to be me referencing a bunch of bands and stuff. And then it was just like, it just sounded like a Mad Lib, so I kind of had to like cut it back to a Deer in the Headlights reference. And then that Brand New reference, where in my mind I was fully making fun of Brand New and their fans, but people are not getting that joke. That's one of those moments where the joke didn't land also. But just like, I don't know, movie and TV and film, it's just always been a part of me. And it just came naturally to just like reference it. And it just makes for, like, good out-of-nowhere rhymes. Like, at the end of the first record on Germany 1991, the line about this band called The Family Bed, and then how we could have a friendship like them because you were inseparable. And then, you know, making a Breaking Bad joke. Like, people always point that out as one of their favorite parts of that song. It's just, like, little things that, like, for one, people have, like, stuff that they can relate to and, like, feel like they can talk to me about at the show and not just music stuff. And it's just fun to me, like, I just always love Easter eggs, you know, being into prog rock and metal and stuff, like, little Easter eggs like that Cody and Cameron one I was talking about. I just love that shit. I love it. Or like when the Gorillas put out like their Plastic Beach website interactive game. I just love stuff like that. And I was like, why not? Why can't I do that?
For sure. Yeah, and it's really interesting how, like you mentioned, like those references are one thing that people really latch on to. And then the other thing that they latch on to are like the super specific references you make to your own life that like no one could ever truly understand. It's like, it's really funny how like those two things are like polar opposites, but they're also like the things that people, that stand out to people the most.
Yeah, because it'll be like after a show, they'll be like, I heard you talk about Breaking Bad. What's your favorite episode? Who's your favorite character? Also, I cried really hard. And like, it's just like, it's always those in-between things. There's nothing, there's no like middle ground for that. And I love it.
It's the Fly episode, right? That's your favorite?
Oh, God. I think it's tied between Fly and probably Ozymandias. But it's just, it's because that was just wild from front to the end.
And I mean, throughout the record, you kind of talk a lot about like the change in your mentality from kind of like viewing the band as a DIY thing to going all in and trying to make it a career. Were there any reservations about that, either like personally or like how you would be viewed within like the scene?
No. back in November, like we kind of quit the local New York DIY scene, and I kind of told everyone to fuck off. In no short words, like I literally was just like, fuck this, I'm out. And just realizing that like my entire life, I've always wanted to be like bands like St. Vincent or Blood Orange or Cody and Cambria, like these, or even Fall Out Boy, like these bands that are just like have no right, but they did it. Like they made it outside of their very specific like scenes and just are thriving. Like I always wanted to like follow Tyler the Creator's trajectory so badly. Just like, it's amazing. He's on his fifth record and it's his first number one, and he beat DJ Khaled. And it's just like this guy who just like has a pretty DIY ethos, made all of his videos, made all of his clothes, made all of their merch, designed everything. And he's like album number 5 and just still hasn't even peaked yet. Like, and I realized that DIY is kind of limiting for that. Because like, I love DIY, don't get me wrong. DIY and emo, it's great. But it's always just like, you're booking a tour. It's just like, okay, like all house shows, when we'll get a donation for the band. And it's like, you know, I'm almost 30. Our oldest member is 34, 35. And it's just like, we're not at that age where we can just live off of DIY donations, and that we really want more than that anyway. Like, yeah, I would love a song on the radio. Yeah, I would love to be on TV. Like, it's weird that that's frowned upon, or like how a lot of DIY bands, this joke I saw on Twitter was, your favorite DIY band announces their record on February or on Monday and then announces their breakup on Wednesday. It's just like, I don't know. I just can't vibe with that anymore. And especially with the whole like cancel culture and like, all these like liberal white people from upstate that are in charge of all this stuff. It's just not for us. And I don't know. It's a whole nother thing to get into.
Well, I mean, I think it's really good that you're kind of like throwing yourself headfirst into it. Like that almost makes it kind of like easier for people to either get the fuck out or be like, this is awesome and I support them on it.
Yeah. I don't want anyone calling me a sellout.
Easier.
But
I mean, it definitely seems like you guys still have that like DIY mentality, like curtains down, we say like if one person connects to just one thing we say, then that's enough for me because we're not just here to get paid. So it's like, you do still kind of like have that going for you as well. Like,
thank you. Yeah. Like I would like some money. I would like a check, but I'm also great that someone's vibing to this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess kind of this connects into what we've been talking about. Like, could you talk a little bit about like the idea of and like the frustration of there being like gatekeepers in DIY, which is like basically a space that like, isn't supposed to have them?
Yeah. It's always the kids that are like from a suburb or from Long Island and like these safe white people that come here and they're just like, fight the power, fight the man, but also I'm gonna work at a tech startup that doesn't have any black or brown people. And I'm going to move into a brand new apartment complex in a safe neighborhood, which means all the black and brown people got kicked out. And it's just like, that was the scene I got stuck in when, you know, these last few years that I told them all to fuck off. And I just realized like, why is this guy from fucking Yale telling me who I can and can't play with. Why are they saying, you know, like, hey, man, we need a diverse build. Would y'all want to play? And it's like, I know they meant well, but it's just like, hey, that's kind of fucked up to say. Like, why am I still having these run-ins living in New York? It's like, I moved so far. I moved 1,000 miles, and I'm doing the same thing. And it just feels like in most emo scenes, it's all, you know, because it's a college-age genre. So it's like all these transplants of people that aren't from here taking over the venues. Like, I talked to some, all these people that I know that live here, and they're just like, yeah, like these yuppies came in and they asked us to get them on shows, and then they stopped asking us to play. And now we're just kind of like outcasts in our own city. And I'm just like, damn, like I contributed to that obviously because I didn't know any better. So just trying to get out of that. And like now, like we have this whole scene where it's a bunch of black and brown, queer, trans, non-straight white men dominating it. And it's just like I see it. It's like night and day. Like I can play a show with a rapper and everyone's just like, I don't know. Like I would rather, like, it's just two more emo bands in the same bill that we see every weekend. And like now I can play a show with a rapper and it's just like, this was great. What, this was such a cool night. And there's a DJ set afterwards. And it's just so much more, I guess, genuine. It's more authentic to just be like, I can set the rules. Why don't I? Like, we're starting to get to that point where we have the power to just be like, we're not going to play if you can't guarantee that they're going to be more than just us. Like, we're not the only other band. So just kind of like the learning process of realizing that DIY can be better and that I have every right to try and make it better and just building a team of people that also see that. So I don't want to leave it behind altogether. Like, it's going to be here with or without me, and I would like for it to be in its best and most purest form. Just gatekeepers need to go. Rich white kids from the suburbs need to not be the ones in charge. Like, it's just a whole list of demands that, like, need to change. That luckily they are changing, though. It just, I think it should be happening faster. I am grateful for the progress that we have. It's just, I'm an impatient bastard.
It's awesome that you do, like you said, like that you're kind of starting to feel, more and more people are starting to feel empowered to do that and follow what they think, rather than like, you know, like, yeah, you said, it's great, like saying, we want a diverse bill, so we're going to ask you to do that. But it's even better for that not even to be part of the question, for it to just be like, you're part of the bill, like, we want you to be part of the bill because you're rad and you just happen to be diverse, and like, we have this, you know, Rolodex of all these rad bands, and 50% of them happen to be, you know, non-white cis people, because that's just because that's like the way it is. Like, that would be the end goal, like, for sure.
100%. And it always feels like low effort, like, you know, like, they didn't go and look for any other bands. So they were like, hey, do you guys want to play, or do you know a band that's not straight white dudes? It's like, I know that you can look this up yourself. Like, I know that you guys know these things. And it's just low effort from the people in charge. I just think it should be more effort and more, like, thoughtfulness.
For sure. And like, that process of kind of, like, empowering the people who aren't in charge instead of, you know, saying, I'm in charge, so I'm going to make sure that I do good.
Yeah, because then for the people like us, like bands like us, they'll just feel like, how did you do this? Or, like, can you, like, help us get a show? They're like, oh, I know it's tacky, I'm sending you my song. I'm like, no, like, fucking send it to me. I want you to. I want to hear what other people like me have to say and contribute, and I would be honored to get you set up with a show. And, like, I'm always just like, any questions you have, let me know. And, like, because we're getting to that point where people are, like, sending fan mail, and they're, like, surprised that I respond, which is such a weird trip. It's amazing. And I'm just like, no, of course, like, this is great. I feel amazing that you feel this way. Tell me how I can help you. I would love to any way that I can.
Yeah, that's awesome, like, building, like, that community. And it's funny, that actually goes back again to the Steve Albini interview I was listening to that I mentioned. He was saying after he did In Utero, he kind of saw a lull in, like, the local bands and, like, the independent bands, which were kind of his bread and butter because of the way he worked. Like, he saw a lull in that because everyone just assumed that he was too big for them now, so it's like...
Okay, yeah, which is such a weird thing, like, you know, because obviously hero worship is bad, and, like, meeting your idols could be terrible, but, like, I'm just of the thought that you should, like, why not try, and, like, you know, just not even, like, hey, I'm going to stalk you, just be like, hey, I just want a quick message, I love your record, I love your art, I love your movies, whatever, and, you know, if you get a response, that's great. If not, like, try not to take it personally, because obviously, like, my entire life is just, like, trying to hit up my idols and getting ignored and just, like, rationing away. It's like, well, they don't know who I am yet, but hopefully they will soon. And, like, you know, finding that healthy balance of just, like, because I just read this article from, like, you know, like, Phoebe Bridgers and like Georgia from Camp Cope being like, how do you deal with fans wanting to talk to you? And like the one spectrum is just like, oh yeah, I try to get back to everyone. The other spectrum is like, fuck it, I don't owe you anything. And I just think, you know, finding the perfect in between, and especially like being in the genre that we are, when people like me, I'm like, yes, I want to hear you're in a black emo band, punk band, please send it my way. Like, I would love to hear that.
Hey there. As part of this podcast, I'd like to promote people who I think are doing cool things, in addition to those I interview for the show. For the first handful of episodes, I will be shouting out other podcast creators who I've taken inspiration from in the creation of this podcast. Today, I want to share my appreciation to Ron Funches and his podcast, Getting Better. Ron Funches is a stand-up comedian, actor, and overall ray of joy. His podcast is all about self-improvement and has been a major influence in helping me personally change my mindset for the better. Even if you're not familiar with him or the guests on a particular episode, all of his conversations are full of gems and general advice and positivity. His genuine confidence and can-do attitude are the main reason I decided to start this podcast and had the drive to follow through. So please check out Getting Better with Ron Funches.
Just to kind of start to wrap things up, could you tell me about like one of like a recent success and a recent challenge that you guys have faced as a band?
So I guess challenge would be booking this tour. I mean, we did two European tours back to back, and we've never done a full U.S. tour. And it's just like, I don't know. To date, it's like when me and my wife first came to New York and then had to go back to Kansas. It's like, oh man, like, touring Europe is just a whole nother level that is just like, it's just mind-blowing. And then going back to DIY shows, so like I made the conscious effort to be like, I'm going to put in the effort, it's not just going to be a bunch of DIY shows, I'm going to like say that we want to get paid this much, we want this band, just being in control. There's a lot of DIY bookings being like, hey, if you could spare me like a slot on something, and me just being like, this is what we want, this is how what we can do for you, what we want you to do for us. And just having that, I guess just getting that big dick energy of just like being, acting like I'm a big band and that I can just demand these things and that it'll like go well. And it surprisingly has. It's a full 30-day tour. Obviously, it still took about 3-4 months to book, but just like, you know, not having that security that I don't have to like shake the promoter down to get paid or settle up at the end, or just being like, you know, we're going to make this much and, you know, we have a guarantee of this and a place, not just like playing a basement, asking for a place to stay. Trying to make that transition, you know, because it's like one thing to be like, oh, I don't want to be DIY as much anymore, but it's another thing to like actually pursue it. So it's like now we're like trying to find a booking agent and like realizing that I don't have to do everything myself and pull my hair out and my bandmates' hair out, and just like just transitioning to like being like a professional quote unquote band, and just like realizing that it doesn't have to be me against the world. But that would be literally the challenge, and the success would be this upcoming
tour. That's right. That's really awesome. One of my favorite recent podcasts that I started listening to is Getting Better with Ron Funches. Great comedian, by the way, if you don't know him. So he ends every episode asking for either a piece of advice or something that you've just been thinking about, whether it's related to music or DIY or just like your life in general. So I want to just kind of steal that from him and ask you to kind of do the same kind of reflection.
Such a hard question. Just something I could offer to people, I guess. It's that, because I've always just been, I don't want to say like anti-school, but I've never been that guy where I'm just like, I need to go to college. I need to like, I've always just been like, I want to learn how to edit videos, so I'll just Google it. Like, I think we put a lot of stock into getting a higher education, or like we shame community colleges and we shame like blue collar jobs, like being a plumber or an electrician, when like they can make 6 figures like the first year out. I just think the same thing goes with like with music. You don't have to have a manager if you don't want to. You don't have to pay to play if you especially don't pay to play. You don't have to do all these things that people tell you that you have to do. They're like shows with like, you have to sell 100 tickets before we guarantee you. Like, we, especially with like the internet age, we just live in this time where like you can do something, you can set out to do it, and you can do it your own way and not compromise. Like, We're on a label that I've liked for 20 years now, and I tell them no so often. Like, you can, it doesn't matter what they can do for you. You can tell anyone no, and or you can come to a compromise. You can be unflinching in your goals, and you can take as much time as you need to. the internet creates so many possibilities and so many ways to learn and challenge yourself and be better. So I guess that's what I think about a lot is just the internet and how it's just changed society and how we would be without the internet, where we would be without it. So it's just a mix of seeing the tools that are available to you and just using them and just thinking, I have a goal, research it, spend as much time as you need to, and then implement it. And even if you fail, just start a new goal and just see what you can improve on from last time.
For sure. Yeah, I have two things to say to that. First is Ron Funches always says, you're going to nail it. So I probably should have started with that, and you did nail it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
and second is, I've heard it said a few times at least, DIY doesn't mean do it yourself. It means decide it yourself. And I feel like that really loops into what you were saying.
Okay. I never heard that, but I'm going to start saying that now. Yeah.
Because, like you said, the power is in your hands. It's at your fingertips. You can choose to have a manager or not. Like, you can choose to pay for play or not. Like, you can, all this stuff is all, it's fully, the point of DIY is that you can do whatever you want, so.
Yeah, it might take a little longer. It might be a little harder, but you can do it.
And it'll likely be worth it.
Yes, absolutely.
And there you have it. Episode 1 of Fly on the Call is in the bag. Thank you so much to Eric for taking the time to talk, and Jamie Coletta of No Earbuds for helping to set this up. If you enjoyed this conversation, please check out the band's new album and catch them on tour if they are coming to your area. Links to their music, tour dates, and more are all in the show notes. I'd like to extend a special thank you to The Alternative for helping to promote Fly on the Call, and Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song. You can check the show notes for where to find each of them, follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod, and email feedback, suggestions, or greetings to me at FlyOnTheCallPod@gmail.com. Every Monday, I will be posting a picture hinting at who this week's guest is. The first person to guess correctly will be able to hear the episode early, so please follow along. Thank you for listening, and talk to you soon. Fly on the call.
I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.